Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. This week's show is the start of a series of candidate interviews for the provincial election in Northumberland, Peterborough South. The order is completely random based on when the various campaigns were able to book interviews. To begin, you will hear from incumbent David Piccini, the Progressive Conservative candidate. I'm so pleased to have with me today Northumberland Peterborough South MPP David Piccini, who is now candidate David Piccini. Welcome to Consider This.
Yes. Thanks for having me, Rob.
Rather than getting you to go down a lengthy list of things you've accomplished over the past few years as MPP, because I know you will have a lot of those in your speeches and literature during the campaign, I want you to pick one thing, and I'm going to hold you to one thing, that you did not include, that you wish you had have included in your speeches and literature. One thing people will not see or hear over the next 4 weeks that you wish you had included.
That's a very interesting, you've got me here, Rob. That's a very interesting one. I would say the biggest piece for me would be the broader environmental accomplishments as minister, because it's sort of province-wide, but it's a role I hold that I know is near and dear to many, many hearts in our community. I would say of that land protection, I would say is the broader piece and the three small pieces, O'Neill property, which increased by a third with the support for the Nature Conservancy of Canada, the boreal wildlands, which isn't in our riding, Rob, but, you know, it would have been nice to include. It's the largest protection of a forest, a private protection in Canada's history. And I joined Minister Gibeau, my federal counterpart, to announce that. So for me, as an avid outdoorsman and someone that loves the outdoors, it's one I, you know, would have loved to have included. I could almost do an entire brochure on that alone. And, it's one thing, but that's a great question. I've got to say, a really good question, Rob.
I know you talk to many people. And again, let's not talk about everyone, but give me one example of an encounter with a constituent that almost moved you to tears.
I don't need to think hard about this one. I was, often for the pictures that you see with politicians at events, what you don't see is the sundown. So, you know, picture the sun setting. It's a beautiful evening and it's quiet. There's no pomp and circumstance around me exiting my MPP office. I was carrying my last box out, moving over to the campaign office, because of course now I'm situated here in the campaign office. And a woman approached me. She was going to the pizza shop next to me. Great pizza, by the way. And she said to me, she just came up and extended her hand and said, "Can I shake your hand?" And I said, "Yes." And I shook her hand and she said, "I just wanted to let you know, we've never met, but you helped my father when he was getting early onset dementia get him the care that he needed." And for me, Rob, you see announcements, you see in the paper, we'll talk about the sort of big announcements, but I've often said amidst the quiet of my own family's house or to my parents or my fiance, these are the things that for me make this, it gives me the energy to get up the next day to work hard in this riding. It's the things that matter more to me than a multi-million dollar announcement. Hearing what that meant to her and having, they'd had to call the police because her father had left. and left the house and sort of wandered off a number of times. And I remember that. And when she reminded me, I remember that incident. And so for me, Rob, I mean, when you get to help people, that's at its core what this job is about. And for me, that I almost cried when she told me about it. He'd, of course, passed away shortly thereafter. And they were marking on that day the 1 year anniversary of his passing. And she just said, my husband and I talked about you today. And so I'm so glad I got to bump into you, because I'd never actually met her. It was just over the phone because we were in the depths of the pandemic.
Mayor Bob Sanderson in Port Hope sent out a press release recently reiterating their concerns about how the handling of the purchase of the Wesleyville lands. And I think if you were to talk to anybody, in at least in Port Hope Town Hall or even some residents, well, it would say that, you know, the Senate, the way things were handled with Wesleyville was overreaching and was ignoring local concerns. I don't know. How do you justify that? Because they still feel like you are getting in the way of local control and honoring a deal that was 2 years in the making.
Yeah, I mean, look, we share in the common goal. Where we differ is timelines and an actual credible plan to get it done. And I think we want to work together to achieve common outcomes. And we share, as I said, the common goals. This is when, you know, when facts of the agreement are that, you know, and out of no fault of their own, these are two ships moving in the night together, the Center of Realty Excellence, and what the province or what the municipality, I should say, was doing with an agency of government. Ultimately, we're accountable for agencies of government. And when one seeks to finance that using a backstopped by a provincial loan, I think it's understandable that the province would have a look at that and the province would want to apply the most recent legislation to that. And again, we're working together. We share a common outlook and we share common goals. And I think when we look to some of the things I want to achieve there, I want to see, you know, the protected area protected forever under the Provincial Parks and Conservation Reserve Act or the PPCRA, which is our strongest tool as a province to protect significant wetlands, significant environmental features. You know, municipalities don't have those tools. So I think what Bob said to me recently, and I, you know, I'm sure he's shared the same with you and others, is that he understands that we'll be able to better achieve our common goals working together.
Many county residents have watched you and your fellow MPPs across the province make a litany of announcements regarding all kinds of funding, from healthcare to police to internet, you name it. Mm-hmm. Maybe some people listening who are saying to themselves, you know, they're spending all this money, giving all these breaks, and then once the election's over, the other shoe's going to drop. And then suddenly the cupboard's going to be bare. We're all going to see cuts to programs, service cuts, all kinds of changes that will not have been announced during the election. So balanced budgets will take place in the name of fiscal responsibility. What can you say to those people who are worried all these voter-friendly announcements are precursors to pain after the election?
Well, I would say anybody who spent any remote attention to, and just check my social media feeds, since from day one, I fought for our community to bring in investments and announcements. Of course, around election time, people who start shifting their gears more to politics, who maybe don't pay as much attention under normal circumstances, will look and say, oh, it's the goodies. I get that. Rob, I get that. I'm not going to say, you know, I think what they don't hear and what is important is for the broadband announcement. We were ready to make that announcement 6 months ago. We were working with the federal government through the UBF fund, the Universal Broadband Fund, to make sure that there was no overlap in terms of projects we were funding in our community. That's important work. I'm not going to sit here and slag the feds. I'm not going to sit here and slag anybody. I'm just going to say they're doing their due diligence. We're working together. I raised this at cabinet. I raised it with my federal counterpart, Minister Guibeau. I raised it with Minister LeBlanc and others. They listened. They were doing their due diligence. I learned something about what they were doing that I didn't know. They learned from us that we had a project in Northumberland that was going to connect everybody by 2024, and we couldn't waste a summer fall construction season. So I get it. On the go announcement, what people didn't hear was the fact that the province months ago came to bear with $250,000 and through negotiations ended up where we were with the data sharing agreement to bring in go service. We were looking at a fixed stop with a bus. County is embracing an on-demand model that has been proven successful in other jurisdictions, and it's a collaborative effort together. So that's what people don't see. And again, I mean, I made this announcement in Codrington where we had a broadband roundtable in 2019. And what's really refreshing for me is scrolling through the comments. Of course, there's going to be some haters. I always get those. But seeing people who said, you know, Dave, I was there in 2019 when you had that roundtable and you've delivered. And if I think back to where we were as a community, we had no community paramedicine, no rural outreach health clinics. We weren't training nurses with standalone training in our community. All of that in healthcare, we got it done. We're doing that now. We had no broadband connectivity, cell phone blackouts. We got it done. We had no service into the Go network. We got it done. I'm incredibly proud of my record, proud of working with municipalities. And I think we've had some monumental achievements that we could have seen in the last 15 years. We didn't. We did now. We've got it done.
If there's one theme that is going to be dominant in this election, it's going to be affordability.
Yes.
You know, people are facing an inflationary economy where their dollars are buying less and the cost of everything is going through the roof. Now, your government has taken a number of steps to make life more affordable. They've refunded license fees, for example, and there's lots of other examples. But what about those at the lower end of the financial spectrum? Now, your government has increased minimum wage to $15.50 an hour, yet most places, a living wage is much higher than that. Why did you not increase the minimum wage so people can afford to live in Ontario?
Well, I think it's a never-ending prophecy if you say food's going up, cost of traveling is going up, all of these things are going up without asking the question why and just saying, well, let's just raise it here and then it raise it there. I mean, bottom line, and I speak to any Canadian Tire, home hardware dealer in our community, if you put up their costs overnight by 30%, which is what the previous government proposed to do, they will raise their costs on the consumer. So then you'll be asking me 6 months later, you know, price of everything's gone up, Dave, give people more money and an increase in minimum wage. And I think what people wanted to see was predictability. I know perhaps government struggles in planning, but businesses, small businesses, shopkeepers in our community don't. They plan 3, 5, 10-year cycles out. And so they deserve a government that works with them in that process. And that's what we're doing. And I think these affordability issues, Rob, I'm not going to stand here and say it's unique only to Ontario. Without question, we see it across Canada. We see it across the globe in the wake of a global pandemic. But I think when you look at certain policies that only exacerbate and contribute to that, it's our job as public policymakers to examine that. We want to make sure that we're not needlessly through red tape or through multiple gatekeepers to jump, making the cost of affordable housing that much more expensive. So we're working collaboratively to address that. For simple things like getting to work, we've said, yeah, we're going to reduce the toll. We're going to remove the tolls, I should say, on the 412 and the 418, the only north-south tolls. And I think this is a stark contrast. People have a choice between, do we go back to a government that increased your driver's license fees, not once, not twice, not three times, but four times, or do you work with a collaborative government that is looking at ways to make your life more affordable and put more money back in your pocket? And the bottom line is the reality and the record of the previous Liberal government was they never met an Ontarian that they didn't want to increase their taxes. They never met an Ontarian that they didn't want to increase the cost of day-to-day lives. I love fishing. They didn't even leave grandfathers and grandkids out when they increased fishing and hunting fees. I mean, this is insane.
These are specific things. But David, we're talking about minimum wage. We're talking about so many people. The only job they can get is a part-time minimum wage job, and that doesn't even come close to the cost of living. And, you know, I appreciate, you know, when you talk about inflation and how it happens, you know, if it costs more for a business, they up their prices, and then we get that upward spiral, which causes inflation. But at the same time, people are struggling right now because they can't get full-time jobs. They're not making enough money. And I'm talking about people at the lower end. What are you doing for those and people, say, on disability payments that are struggling just to pay the rent and to eat?
Yeah, let's look at someone. So I've spoken to many in our community who live, as I did, you know, when graduating school and paying through school, I sliced deli meats to get through. And, you know, let's look for folks I speak to. When we reduce the cost of gas, it matters to them every day in getting to work because they drive to work. That matters. When we reduce the costs of their extracurricular activities on weekends, hunting, fishing, when we reduce the costs of their travel on the north-south highways, that matters to them. When we look at bigger paychecks, a big hallmark, a tenet of what our government's running on, and we say to them, we're going to give you $28,000 to retrain so that you can equip yourselves with the skill sets to get bigger paychecks, it matters to them. You know, and we didn't see that in the past. We launched micro-credentials. We've launched a whole, you know, a whole new lifestyle where someone can earn while they learn. This never existed with the previous government. Micro-credentials and stackable credentials where one can learn at their own pace to get bigger paychecks. We're funding it. It's OSAP eligible. These are all things that matter. And with the small day-to-day costs of food, costs of gas, costs to drive on certain roads, again, we're putting more money back into people's pockets. And these things matter. There are others who think the only way to deal with this, and I'm sort of getting from your question that you might prescribe to bigger government, bigger government programming, and bigger government answers. And I think this is a moral and philosophical line where I just would respectfully disagree. I think that when we unleash the talent that is Ontarians, when we support them in unleashing their ingenuity, and when we get government out of the way, that's when Ontarians thrive. That's when Ontarians succeed. And I'm proud to be part of a government that's doing that.
It's not what I prescribe to. It's what others say. So I'll make that clear. Your government has given unprecedented financial support to local hospitals, long-term care, and healthcare. And in fact, Northumberland was one of the first ridings to be approved to create the Ontario Health Team. You've also spent a lot of money training personal support workers. Now, what about staff, nurses and doctors, you know, to that have been, you know, giving all this care, but there's all going to be all this new spaces created, all this expansion taking place. How are we going to fill those spaces? I understand right now there are openings for about 22,000 nurses right now. How are you going to fill those? How are you going to fill those spaces and keep doctors in Ontario?
That's an excellent question. I think the very question of there's all of these new spaces, there's all of this expansion, acknowledges the fact that the government has at a historic rate been building new hospitals, expanding seats, which I appreciate because it, you know, it's the first time we've seen a nursing seat expansion in 30 years when we expanded fully funded nursing seats in the province of Ontario. One of the reasons I got involved was when the previous government was cutting residency positions for doctors. I worked for the Royal College of Physicians and Surgeons of Canada and saw the detrimental effects that was having. We've expanded nursing seats. So let's look at Queens, for example, because I want to localize this. Queens has 20 new residency spots. I had Dr. Philpott, Jane Philpott, their dean here. They're doing innovative placements like getting first and second year trainees into a rural setting. And what we're asking from the trainers, the Campbellford Memorial Hospitals, the NHHs of the world, we're saying, let's identify this young talent and let's keep them in a rural setting.
We live in a time where there is very divisive politics. There's a lot of negativity we see in the legislature. We watch attack ads. And some people may wonder, whatever happened to civility in politics? Can you name one policy or one idea put forward by the NDP or the Liberals that you would support?
Oh, yes, the breed-specific legislation, Sherry DeNovo. You know, they're targeting the wrong end of the leash with the Dog Owners Liability Act. So I'm an avid, you know, I love animals and specifically dogs. I have two of my own. And I worked closely with them on that. And it's often maybe not a policy so much as where I think we can work together, Rob, is on the ideas. I think we all agree that dignity in aging is important. We might disagree on how to get there, but I think the opposition challenge us and offer ideas, some of which is taken at committee process. And in many respects, they bring forward private members' bills, which we have passed at a historic rate. There's no government that's passed as many opposition PMBs in modern history as we have in our short 4 years here. And I think that'll continue second term. So I've enjoyed working many, I'm friends, you don't see that in question period after we'll go over, someone will come over and say, Dave, the Kakabeka Falls run, can you work with your Ontario Parks to make it happen? And I'll call them and I'll go up there and I'll be at the launch of the race, and you won't see this in mainstream. I think more local journalism like yours covers this, where I'm at the announcement and I acknowledge the NDP member and thank her for her advocacy in helping us work this out. So these are things people often don't see, but I think in this campaign, for me, without question, I will contrast what happened under previous governments and where we've turned a corner or where we've sought a different path forward. I think that's important. People deserve to know. What you won't see me doing, I'm not going to be negatively going after the candidates or any of them. I respect anybody who puts their name on a ballot. I respect my opponents. I gather we now have candidates for all major parties running in our riding. I respect them. I'm looking forward to debating them on the campaign trail and to contrasting our ideas. But at the end of the day, what we all share is a desire to serve our public, a desire to see a better community. We differ in how we get there, but I think we need to restore more civility in the debate. And last night I was duking it out with two NDPers on their doorstep, but we smiled and we talked about ideas, and we agreed that should I win again, they're coming in for coffee and we're going to sit and talk about long-term care. So at its core, and I've tried to lead by example my last 4 years by having an open door to people who challenge me.
To finish, tell me one thing you are passionate about, a hobby, a guilty pleasure, an activity that has nothing to do with politics.
Oh, cooking. Love to cook. I wanted to start Puccini's Paninis before I went into politics. I'd had a business plan. I'd actually sat down with my father. I was, early in my professional career, I didn't have the savings because I was paying off some debt from university and rent, et cetera, living, the life of someone in their mid to late 20s. And I had this vision when I worked at Place de Portage to start a sandwich shop. That has spiraled. I've learned it from my mom, my nana, from my dad's family as well, my grandparents, and I love to cook. And, for me, I think maybe in retirement or one day I'll open a restaurant or something, because I love to cook. I love Italian cuisine. I love the cuisine of the world, actually. I'm a self-proclaimed foodie, and I even on my spare time, nothing to do with politics, but do try and various dinners and support in that, share in that love to raise funds for important causes in our community. But love to cook. It's actually when I'm most relaxed. If I need to decompress from a day at work, I go and cook, and love, love, love to cook. And risotto is probably my signature dish.
David Puccini, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you very much for having me, Rob. I've really enjoyed chatting with you.
That was David Puccini, the Progressive Conservative candidate. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.